good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly, the oldest, longest running gay and lesbian radio show in the world. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink, and our guest is Rebecca Covell. Rebecca is an attorney. I see consternation over there at the board. We're fine? Okay.
Yeah.
I hear nothing, but that's okay. I hate when I see consternation from KNON people over there at the board.
Especially when they have a Superman logo on their shirts.
Right.
Because Clint is the man.
Rebecca is an attorney, and we asked her to come on because we know there's all kinds of stuff that we really need to be thinking about in order to replace the stuff that we don't get because of no relationship recognition here in Texas.
First of all, I'd like to say Rebecca is far more than just an attorney.
Okay. I didn't say we have Rebecca Covell on. She's just an attorney.
Oh, go
she's
on,
like a,
really.
A legacy of leadership in our community in Dallas for a very long time, and nationally. So
well, thank you,
we're
Patty.
Excited to have you on the
just
show.
Just this week, she won an award, the Dallas Voice Reader's Choice Award.
Yay.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
And there's a lot of competition.
Is that right? Yeah, there are a lot of lawyers. You can't throw a stick without hitting a ton of lawyers. So I was very honored, very honored.
Well, one of the reasons that we did want you on is we were talking several weeks ago about a case where one partner was suing another partner because of custody. And I know I talked to you about that case, and that's not really something that you handle much, but you do handle a lot of the just regular relationship stuff.
I do. I, as I'm often fond of saying, I'm really good at sticking people together. I do lots of wills and trusts and powers of attorney and help create relationships when none exist. However, I don't do the tearing apart and divorce work. So if there are custody battles or divorce-type matters, I have a Rolodex full of attorneys who are happy to talk to you, but I'm not one of them.
So you're an uniter, not a divider.
There you go, exactly. And I'm compassionate about it, too.
Well, that's good to know. Okay, so Patty is in a traditional relationship. She and Aaron have been together for 10 years. When I say a traditional relationship, I mean not like mine.
I was about to say, what's traditional about the relationship?
Girl meets girl.
And we're almost
girl moves in with girl. Girl hires U-Haul, and they live happily ever after. That's a traditional relationship.
They
it's
nest.
What I grew
yes.
up with.
Yes.
Okay.
More than 10 years, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
More than 10 years.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
More
this
than
is 10
a long-term
years, right?
relationship.
Yeah. What are some of the things that Patty and Aaron should have, but they don't?
Besides love. Oh, you have that.
They have love.
You have love. Well, let me preface my comments with, of course, I'm a lawyer, so I give you a disclaimer. This information is intended for educational purposes and conversational purposes. Just because we're talking, Patty, or our other hosts here, and you, the audience, get thee to a lawyer about your specific situation. This is just general conversation.
Right, and
okay.
Really, different people need different things for different reasons, so this is just like a laundry list of things that you might suggest and reasons that they might want to consider
sure.
having these things.
And I'd just like to add that as we talk about this stuff, there's so many things that will be topics, I think, that we'll talk about that would be covered if we could marry.
That's a great segue into how I would approach this topic. Before we talk about your specific circumstances and yours and Aaron's relationship, I think we ought to take a broader view so that you can compare how you have to handle and protect your relationship in Texas as opposed to protecting your relationship nationally. As you may know, since the elections in November 2012, there's really been a groundswell of support for equality. I mean, we were just astonished by the wonderful ballot vote measures that passed and created rights for thousands, literally thousands of LGBT couples that live in other states, not Texas, but in other states. So presently, since November 2012, there are actually 9 states in the District of Columbia that will actually recognize same-sex marriage with all the consummate rights that go with it for that state.
Right.
Texas, of course, is not one of them. The thing to remember about that statistic is none of those marriages are going to be recognized at the federal level because of the so-called DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act law, And none of them are going to be, none of those couples are going to be entitled to the 1,138 rites that attach to a so-called traditional marriage license.
And that's important because even with wills, trusts, whatever, there's no way to really go and duplicate all those 1,000 plus benefits.
That's exactly right. We can certainly have wills and we can certainly establish trusts. And so what you're doing, particularly in Texas, is creating a legal relationship by contract, whereas a heterosexual couple will have all of those relationship rights implied in the law. So they won't have to lift a finger and there's always going to be default statutes that protect them.
And, for example, you could never create a draft a document and file it with any court that would allow me to get Social Security benefits from Aaron should she pass first.
Precisely.
This, I mean, it's not even possible. So when people say, just go get a bunch of documents and you'll be fine, that's really not true at all.
That's not true. And even if you do get a will, that can be challenged.
Well, anybody's will can be challenged regardless of your orientation, but you bring up a good point because even couples who have wills in our community find their wills are challenged more regularly than the general or vanilla populations. So we have that to contend with. And if you go to an attorney who works in the community and is familiar with these types of statistics and the numbers of times that our wills are challenged, you can do things to armor yourself and armor your wills that a generic couple would never even think of.
So let's start with that. The first thing that most couples should consider is having a will.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that should be in the will other than I want all these things to be left to this person, I want those things to be left to family?
I think that's a good place to start. Regardless, in Texas, you need to have a will. Your will needs to, among other things, recognize your family background and think about what the court is going to look at when you're no longer there to testify for yourself, right? So you want to be sure that the judge knows who this person is that you've named as your primary beneficiary. Because under Texas law, 10 years together, you said, Patty, more than 10, you're strangers in the eyes of the law of Texas.
Yes.
Complete and total strangers in the eyes of the law. So your will needs to, I think, your will needs to say who this person is to you. Most wills are going to have a little family background, and those vanilla wills you see for heterosexual couples will say, I'm married, I have two children, Huey and Louie. The wills that I draft and other attorneys who practice in the community will usually expand on who the family is and who the background is. Mine typically start out and say, I am not legally married in Texas, but my partner and companion in life is Aaron, it's Patty, and she is the primary beneficiary of my estate. The next thing I put in wills is who I am legally related to so that the court knows that I'm not just, you know, high on drugs or something, that I know that my mother, my father, and my three brothers, you know, are living, and I'll name them by name. And I usually include a little provision, something along the lines that it's not out of lack of love for the rest of my family that I've made distributions to Aaron, but because they're cared for in other ways, and I want to honor and recognize my relationship. So it's not so much for the family, it's because I want the court to know I have testamentary capacity, I'm aware of what I own, and I know exactly who I'm leaving it to, and I'm not doing it out of undue duress or influence. And those are the things the court looks to, and what people and families try to do is bring a will challenge based on that fact or those facts.
Now, with Patty, she should probably have the disclaimer, this is my partner of 15 years or whatever, and despite the objections of my co-hosts.
Probably. We should probably bold that, I think, so that, you know, the judge clearly sees that.
Oftentimes I'll say that we have been companions in life since, you know, the earth cooled or something, so that they know it's been a very long time.
Because it's warming up again. There might be some confusion.
That's right. Since before the earth warmed, maybe that's the way to say it.
So would you start off a will? My situation is a little bit different than Patty's. I'm actually...
It's really different.
I am legally married, though I know we're well aware it's not recognized here in the state of Texas.
Where are you legally married? What state?
We actually got married in Vancouver, Canada.
Okay, you're a Canadian marriage.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we have a child together. Both legally are the parents of this child.
When they decided to find a surrogate, they found a surrogate in Maryland where both names could go on the birth certificate.
Yes, both of our names are on the birth certificate. So,
have you done anything in Texas that would legitimize that birth certificate with both your names. Because Texas won't recognize same-sex couples on a birth certificate, based on what I've been told by family law attorneys. You remember that disclaimer, I'm not a family law attorney.
Right. I've actually heard just the opposite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I defer to your better judgment, because I'm sure you've looked into this in
detail. But we haven't done anything other than that, no.
Okay, so you and your partner are husband in Canada. Mm-hmm. You have a child. You now reside in Texas. Mm-hmm. Did you reside in Texas at the time you went to Canada and got married?
Yes.
Okay, so you've always been a Texas resident.
Yes.
So your question is, how would your will look different from maybe Patty's?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for one thing, you would want to recognize that you have a child that is, what I would say, let me back up and say, I would say, we are legally married in Texas. I'm sorry, in Canada.
Yeah.
And I understand that Texas does not recognize the legality of my marriage. However, if it ever does, if my marriage is ever recognized in the state in which I'm domiciled and by the federal government, then I want him to be treated as my legal spouse for all reasons. Because there's an unlimited marital exemption from estate taxes, among other things. There are spousal exemptions that apply, and you would want to be certain that your husband was entitled to those particular exemptions. So you'd start out recognizing, I understand I'm in Texas, I have to draft this as if I am single in Texas, but I am married in another country. And if it ever becomes legal here, then I want this to be retroactive, essentially.
Right, right.
And then I would suggest that you would both say, we have a child together. We are both recognized parents in the state of Maryland. And the child's name is so-and-so. And it is our intention that my will benefit both my husband and my children. And I usually use plurals because you may have more children in the future.
God forbid.
So,
well, and who knows where you've sown the seed, so to speak. You could be out there, you know, who knows how many kids you have.
It is possible.
So how about those cowboys?
I think that turkey baster was thrown away a long time ago, wasn't it, Laron?
Yeah, that's the one thing about, you know, gay men. There's probably not a lot of unknown children out there.
No. But it happens.
It does.
But one thing we do need to point out, though, is without those little things in there, and they're not little, but they're very important details. If your will is challenged, I'm not a wealthy person, and neither is Aaron, and you know, we could.
Nor are we.
And if my will is ever challenged, I think my entire estate would go to attorney's fees just to defend it.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time Aaron won, if I were to pass first,
mm-hmm.
it's gone.
Well, sometimes families use that strategy, attempting to force some type of resolution that may not be ideal because they know that the surviving partner may not be able to mount a defense. I would like to think that there would be resources available from the community or other ways so that justice would be done, because when you have a properly drafted will, you are in fact entitled to leave your estate to anybody you want. Whether you are legally related to them or not, there is no requirement under Texas law that you name mommy or daddy or brothers and sisters or nieces and nephews as your beneficiaries.
Is there a way to put a poison pill into a will that should somebody challenge this will, that person is automatically disqualified from receiving anything from my estate?
Well, in fact, I usually do put what's called a no contest or an interim clause in wills. The law in Texas has been spotty about enforcing no contest provisions, but I'll still include them because I think the courts are leaning more heavily toward enforcing a provision when the person who signed it, the testator who signed it, was of sound mind at that time, knew exactly what he or she was doing, who he was related to, and how he intended to leave his estate. Mm-hmm. So if you include a provision that says, if anybody challenges my will, I want it to be construed as if they predeceased me, mine actually even say, and their descendants predeceased me. Mm-hmm. So if it's a brother or sister who challenges your will, maybe your will says, I leave everything to partner. If she doesn't survive me, like in Patty's case, then I leave it to my nieces and nephews. But if a brother or sister challenges the will, then they potentially would be writing out not only themselves, but their kids.
Mm.
So, yeah, I would definitely put those poison pill provisions. There's a number of strategies that you can employ in your will, just in the language, to kind of armor the will so that it will have a little more bite to it.
And we're talking to Rebecca Covell. She's an attorney here in Dallas. Her practice emphasizes GLBT couples. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Canon thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now is the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON's P.O. Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. That's KNON Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure you put the name of the show you are supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON Pledge Drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
Sonny Boy Mark, and I'd like to take a minute here to tell you about over 60 minutes of great blues listening available now on KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. This is some great stuff, folks. 15 tracks from the Two Tones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Collie, Johnny Red and the Roosters, the Chris Watson Band, the Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, David Millsap, Sir Loin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, and J.J. and the Detonators. The 1,000 copies we made are selling fast, and we won't reissue it. Get yours now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records and Rewind Music. The CD is available as a download at cdbaby.com. All proceeds benefit KNON, sponsored by Forever Young Records. Vinyl copies available at Forever Young Records only. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit KNON.org. Your ears been bending for some blues? Well, feed them the real thing with Texas Blues Radio Volume 5.
Hi, this is Candy Markham, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Listen.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Rebecca Covell. But, Patty, you have something you want to play before we go back to talking to our guest.
Right. Aaron and I, as we've mentioned on the show in recent times, went to see Janice Ian, a famed lesbian, who also used to write for The Advocate, and she would mention her partner, Mr. Lesbian. But she's a very famous musician. Our generation remembers her very well. She performed at the AT&T Performing Arts Center recently, and we spoke with her, and she had performed the song there. And she said, download it, go to my website, get it, play it. It's called Married in London, and it's something she wrote and performed in London when she performed at the Olympics.
We're married in London, but not in New York. Spain says we're kosher, the States say we're pork. We went in Toronto, the judge said amen. And when we got home, we were single again. It's hard being married and living in sin. Sometimes I'm not sure just which state I am in. Thank God I'm not Catholic. I'd be a mess trying to figure out what to confess. My passport in Sweden says I've got a wife. Amsterdam tells me I'm partnered for life. But back in America, land of the free, I'm a threat to the national security. If I were a frog, here is what I would say. It's hard being green. It's hard being gay. But love has no color, and hearts have no sex. So love where you can, and screw all the rest. Thank you very much.
I think that just about says it.
That's fabulous. And it is. It makes you schizophrenic when you think about your rights in one country as compared to other countries.
Or even one state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just go across the border and things are different. Like, there was a horrible law in Oklahoma that's been taken off the books, but that said that if Laurent were driving from here to Kansas while he was in Oklahoma, Gabrielle wouldn't be Danny's.
And that's actually when that law was thrown out because of a court ruling. That's when I was told by another attorney, absolutely, Texas would recognize both of us as legal parents. But in Texas, if we had adopted our daughter here in Texas, only one of us would be on the birth certificate. That's the difference. That's what I was told.
There's a bill before the House now and in the legislature in Austin to eliminate that obstacle so that you can both be on the on the birth certificate from the beginning.
Well, you're on the cutting edge of that issue, and I totally defer to your family law attorney on your legal rights, and I would probably get a second opinion.
Well, you know, and I'm agreeing with you. I think what the real answer is, it depends on what judge it comes up before.
Yeah.
If it comes up in front of a Dallas County judge, family court judge, chances are he or she will rule in your favor because they're looking at what the intent of that family was. We have good judges here. Even in Collin County, some of the judges are starting to rule very fairly for that family because they're ruling what's best for the child. Get much further north or much further south of here, not so much.
Right.
Well, except when you get to Austin and Travis County, then you'll probably find a more fair-minded judge. But that's the flip side of this fight for marriage is, shouldn't one of the rights of getting married is the right to be divorced? And the big issue that's come up in Texas several times already and is pending on appeal is whether a couple who's been married in another state who actually either got transferred here with their jobs or for whatever reason are now Texas residents want to dissolve their marriage. You know, 50% of traditional marriage is dissolved, so it's not surprising that some gay and lesbian relationships don't make it either. Present company excluded. So it
despite
makes
what we've tried.
So it makes it's an interesting legal conundrum because you go to, depending on whose court you get in, you may be dismissed out of hand, and the Attorney General has actually intervened in several petitions to divorce and insisted that the judge dismiss the case. And a local Dallas family law judge allowed the intervention and then ruled anyway. She wouldn't dismiss the case. In fact, she ruled that the state law was unconstitutional, that they did have a right to divorce, and she, you know, granted the petition for divorce. And, of course, Greg Abbott immediately appealed that, and it's pending on appeal. Jody Shesky, I don't know if you know him, he's a terrific attorney out of Austin who handles these types of issues, and we should watch for this on appeal.
That's so strange. He handles these types of issues. That's never come up before anywhere. I mean, it's so bizarre that a couple wants to get divorced. They go to get divorced in a family court. Why would the Attorney General have even heard of the case?
Isn't that amazing?
Just shows
he's so desperate not to recognize marriage, they can't possibly recognize a divorce because that would somehow, I guess,
it's an incident of marriage.
Yeah.
It's the ability to dissolve the marriage is the argument.
Yeah. Okay. So we did wills. Pretty much.
We scratched the surface with wills.
Well, we scratched the surface with anything else that you can think of that somebody should really think about.
Well, let me just make this observation. Many times people wonder, why can't I just go on the internet and download a will and sign it and leave everything to partner, and then I don't have to involve anybody who might not approve of my relationship or give me hell? And let me suggest to you, the internet is a wonderful thing. It has a lot of interesting information on it, but it also can lead you to information that Bigfoot walks the earth. So you have to be careful with the kind of information that's there. And I would submit to you that a will is like a parachute. You're only going to need it once, but you sure want it to work. Mm-hmm. And you may not want to trust it to some form that's not designed for your community and your special rights. Sorry, but they are special things that you need to do to protect your relationship and armor yourself accordingly. Don't trust a huge decision like that to some kind of internet will or package.
So
get
Bigfoot
thee to a lawyer.
Doesn't exist?
Well, I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying.
It's been scheduled 3 weeks from today.
The craziest article I saw on the internet was when they were talked about where he had marked a tree in the forest. I'm like, how do you know that?
How do you know? Yeah.
You know,
maybe because the height? I don't
know. I think we're getting off topic here just a little. One other thing with wills, for somebody who's single, they also need a will.
I think everybody should have a will if they have any type of asset at all. And I wanted to just footnote this to say, sometimes you might want to do your estate planning, because that's what you use wills for, is to transfer assets when you're gone. You might want to do that kind of planning in a trust. And we can talk about a trust, but then should also have a will, but the will just becomes a funding item that says I leave everything that I haven't already transferred to a trust into the trust. And the advantage of doing that is assets held in the trust are not going to be disclosed in a probate setting. Harder to contest if family doesn't know what you owned, isn't it? So there might be reasons besides sometimes people want to create trusts for tax planning or other purposes. There might be reasons to think about setting up a trust for privacy purposes.
And my dad did one of those, and he had a living trust before he passed, and it was a lump that, you know, was a unit. Yeah. Everything was in it, with everything in it.
Well, that's, you know, if you listen to Susie Orman ever, she talks about creating a trust and calls it an empty suitcase. And so you can fill the suitcase with whatever assets you want. And in California, everybody who gets a living trust, which just means it's created during your life and you control it, is you want to put all of your assets in it in other states, particularly California, because their probate system is hideous and expensive and difficult and long and drawn out. Texas, on the other hand, has one of the easiest probate systems in the country. If you have a properly drafted will with all the formalities required by Texas, and you're not trying to handwrite something and hope that it, you know, with spit in a prayer is going to work, you should have one of the shortest express lines when you're trying to probate the estate. Mm-hmm. I'm just suggesting that you might also think about a trust for privacy purposes as another strategy in our community to protect yourself from a collateral attack from family members.
Now, one of the things that families go after more than anything that we hear about, especially during the worst of the AIDS crisis, people were losing their homes.
Right.
Can a home go into a trust?
Well, it can, but you may have another way that you can safeguard your home from a collateral attack by a family member, and that's to create an agreement between the partners or the spouses that says that we agree we're going to hold title to this house as joint tenants with a right of survivorship. It doesn't go on the deed when you buy the house. This is a separate, standalone written agreement that you sign that says, we're holding this house with rights of survivorship. We agree that we each own an undivided 50% interest in the whole. And when one of us passes away, the survivor shall own 100% of it. And that document is filed in the deed records. So that family challenges your will when first partner dies, guess what? The house transfers, just like a beneficiary designation would, to the surviving partner. And they can challenge the will all they want and fight over the flatware, but the house is going to go to the surviving partner.
And that's something that I think a lot of same-sex couples in Texas that, or not just in Texas, but in states that does not recognize same-sex relationships legally, need to know, because I think they assume that if we bought the house jointly, we're okay.
That is one of the biggest misconceptions. I will tell you, I met with a couple of, the surviving partner a couple of years ago. She had owned her home for a long time. When she and her partner refinanced, she decided to put both of them on the deed to the house and thought they were protected. That was the only asset to speak of. Their bank accounts were held as joint accounts with rights of survivorship. And as it happened, her partner, Michelle, was in a bicycle accident and died. And unfortunately, she darkened the door of my office after the fact, and there was nothing I could do. She ended up owning this house with her now deceased partner's brother and sister, who lived out of state. So just because both names are on the title to the house does not mean there is a right of survivorship. And that's why, David, to your earlier question, everybody should have a will. Even if it's a simple slam-dunk will that says, I leave everything to partner, and if he doesn't survive, then you name a contingency beneficiary.
And do you know why I originally did mine? Is because I got everything from...
Because you're not going to live forever?
Well, no, I am, but that wasn't my concern. I have all of my family's stuff. I have china from grandparents on both sides of the family. I have all kinds of stuff because I'm an only child.
Ah.
So all of it came to me, and there are certain pieces in particular that I want to go back to the right side of the family that other people in the family wouldn't even know belonged to that side of the family. I mean, the last time it was in that side of the family or this side of the family was probably 50 years ago. And that's what I was doing. I was dividing up some of that stuff.
Well, you know, a lot of times I will recommend to couples. Now, you're talking about being a single man, so your situation would be different. But like for Lauren or Patty, if they had that kind of scenario, I might suggest that you put in your will, you leave everything to spouse, partner, and I will leave him or her written instructions about certain items that I want different people to get. And David, to your point, I don't know, maybe you made all these specific bequests in your will. You certainly can do that. But in your situations, if you want to make a global, I give all my personal property to partner / spouse, then over here you can say things without titles, you understand, but things in the home. I leave Grandma Rose's red pattern china to, and you're writing it out over here. Maybe you have a niece or nephew or someone who gets married and you want to give them that china for a wedding present, then you can go back and change your written instructions. You don't have to go back and amend your will. See, so if you think about leaving written instructions for personal property in your homes, it can be a tremendous advantage to your survivors to know who you wanted certain items to go to, but you're leaving your partner as the executor and the primary beneficiary to make that happen.
Now, is there any benefit? I know some people do this when they have, you know, very serious health issues and such, but they'll do like a video of, you know, they're together with their partner and they'll talk about their will and what's in their will and what their wishes are. Is there any benefit to that, or is it even legally recognized? Would they even play it for the judge?
Well, I would start out with this. I would not allow a client to videotape what they are saying is a will. Now, if they want to do a video for family to explain why they're doing what they're doing, and you know they know how long they've been together and what their intentions are, I think that could be of some use and benefit to hear it in your own words. I can see how that might be useful.
I think in my case, maybe videotaping. This is the samovar that's been in the Taffet family for at least 10 generations.
Perfect.
That I would like to go back to that part of the family. This is china that came from that family. That's the kind
Perfect.
Of thing, good use for it, I would think.
Exactly. That, you know? But when it comes to videotaping wills, there's been a lot of studies about this. And what happens is the person who's signing your will, the testator, they get nervous. And so, you know, they're being asked questions and, you know, they're all bug-eyed and they don't know. And it comes off that maybe they don't look to be of so sound mind. And maybe they don't look to be aware of what they own. You know, you have to be aware of the nature of your estate and the natural objects of your bounty, as they say.
So we'd want to keep Aaron off tape.
Entirely off tape. Off the tape. But the thing is, since you don't know how they would react and you want to say, okay, well, let's do another take, and so you do a second take or a third and a fourth until you get it right, if your will is contested, the other side is going to get to see all the outtakes,
mm-hmm.
too. And you're just adding fuel to the fire. Instead, if I think there's going to be a will challenge, there's a couple of things that I'll do. I'll be the notary for one thing, which means they'll have an attorney who's notarizing the will and asking the questions, so I know it's going to be done right. And sometimes I'll have one or two attorneys serve as one of my witnesses and have them sign it, and I'll go through by the book. I mean, my wills are done with such formality that there's no question that it's going to be properly executed and admitted. So the family's going to have an uphill battle because all they have, the testator's gone. They're going to have me as a witness and whoever I've sat in the room to be witnesses. Then if I really think it's a hostile family, I'll have them come back in a year and sign another will. Use different witnesses. Come back a third year later, same will, same terms. The only thing that's changing is the execution date. Mm-hmm. So that if family ever does challenge the will that's done 6 or 7 or 10 years from now, and probably wouldn't be successful in overcoming it and getting it thrown out, but assume worst case and they do, then I've got exhibits A, B, C, and D, and the challenger would have to contest each and every one and show they lacked sound mind on each one of those dates and they lacked testamentary capacity.
Again, and in Aaron's case, would be easy to do. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren.
Love you,
Landis.
Sweetie.
Like Patty Fink, and in spirit, Aaron is here with us. Our guest today is Rebecca Covell. Her practice emphasizes GLBT couples, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Jim Hightower has moved to be a part of KNON's Speak Up Saturday. Jim Hightower's segments can now be heard at the start of each of KNON's great talk programming starting at 7 a.m. with Reverend Marion Barnett's show, Church Information and Open Forum, with the news and talk of South Dallas. Then at 9, the CWA presents Workers' Beat with the news and talk of the unions hosted by Gene Lance and Bonnie Mathias. At 10, the Dallas Observer presents Get Off My Lawn with Jim Schutz, bringing you the other side of Dallas news. Finishing up Speak Up Saturdays at 11 is Lambda Weekly with the news and talk of the LGBTQ community, hosted by David Taffet, Patty Fink, and Laurent Landis. Now starting at each of these shows is Jim Hightower's insightful segment at 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 a.m. each and every Saturday morning right here on the Voice of the People, KNON 89.3 FM.
This is William. I watch Lambda Weekly on YouTube.com, recorded live from KNON Studios.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and Patty Fink. Our guest is Rebecca Covell. Rebecca, we're going to be right back with you. Laron has a quick entertainment report because tomorrow is the Oscars.
Tomorrow is the Oscars. I don't think it's going to be a very gay Oscars, but
no.
it is the Oscars that's gay in itself. Anyway, it's a new year, and that means that a new list of celebrity coming outs are starting to appear. First up, Clive Davis, arguably one of the most prolific, if not the most prolific, record executives in the music business, came out as bisexual this week. It reveals in his new book, The Soundtrack of My Life. Now, at 80 years old, the man responsible for discovering Janis Joplin and Whitney Houston, just to name a few, insists that he has been, though he's been in two long-term relationships with men, he is not gay and that bisexuality does exist. Just for the record, Clive has been married and divorced to a woman twice.
And he has kids.
And he has kids. But this is the big story out of this. He's getting, like, hammered on the net about claiming to be bisexual. So I think what is interesting is, you know, a lot of people think, you know, bisexuals don't really exist, but back in my day, it was better to say, especially when you were first coming out, that you were bisexual.
But he's been married twice.
But now it's like the ties have kind of turned. It's like when he was talking to Meredith Vieira, she said, "We know, I've heard that you're one of three things. You're either gay, you're straight, or you're lying." And I think that's the way a lot of people think today. They just don't think, especially with men, that there's a real true bisexual.
Bisexuality is an established...
I think so. But I
studied
the comments that
just
been hurled at him, like, "No, you know, you're gay." So I don't know what to think about that. GLAAD has announced that Anderson Cooper will receive the Vito Russo Award at the 24th Annual GLAAD Media Awards next month. The award is given to an openly gay GLBT person who has worked to promote equality. The CNN journalist came out last summer, and this will be his first gay event to attend since he's come out. And last, former First Lady Laura Bush wants her part removed from a pro-marriage equality commercial.
I want it removed too.
You want to, well, made by the Respect for Marriage Coalition, which is chaired by HRC.
What a wonderful ad. It has
it was a wonderful
Cheney
ad.
And Laura Bush.
It
oh, gee, thanks.
It has the Laura, you're
my
right,
hero.
Dick Cheney. It has Colin Powell. And they're all, they're clips of them saying different things throughout the years on how they now support marriage equality, including Laura Bush, when she did an interview on Larry King's show back in 2010. Now, her spokeswoman said that the reason why she wants it removed is because she did not approve for it to be included, nor is she associated with the group that made the ad in any way. I don't know. Is that kind of fair weather support?
She said it. I think it's public domain,
and
myself.
She said it
on the air for
I don't know.
Millions
I'm uncomfortable,
of viewers.
Though, with something I said just being included in somebody else's ad without
without permission. I'm like,
I'm actually on her side on this.
Yeah, she didn't retract what she said.
I don't like that ad. Did you see it?
I saw it. It's okay.
I don't really like it.
Why? Because of who's in it?
Well, because Dick Cheney is so creepy. Do you really want him on your side?
Yes.
I think it works better on our side if he was against us. Kind of like having, you know, I like having Fred Phelps against us. That helps us.
Gives us credibility.
Yeah, it does.
Nobody loves, Dick Cheney said, oh, well then,
Yeah, well, yeah, Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm like that, too.
It's equally disturbing when we see the KKK come out to protest.
Right.
You know, Fred Phelps in Westboro. So, you know, it's an odd fellows out there. It is weird kind of having Dick Cheney on our side.
Our guest today is Rebecca Cavell. She is an attorney. Her practice emphasizes GLBT couples. We've been talking about wills. I want to get onto some of the other things that you need. Sure. What about protecting your health?
I think that's actually, there's 6 or 7 documents you should consider. Everybody needs to have a medical power of attorney that allows you to designate partner spouse as your medical agent who can make health or medical decisions for you only if you're incapacitated. So, I'm sorry, Aaron can't run you over and have you committed against your will if you can speak for yourself, Patty. But it does allow you, if you've been in a car wreck or something, to have Aaron there making decisions. Now, I think it's important that your medical power of attorney start with the one that's in the Texas Probate Code, and I suggest that you should include additional rights like the ones that I draft for same-sex couples that says, and my partner shall be able to confer with my physician, see my medical file, even visit me in any facility as if they were my next of kin. So mine are kind of turbocharged and meaty documents that provide additional protections that come up in our community. But yeah, medical power of attorney, and as a companion to that, you need to have what's called a HIPAA release. It's a standalone Patient Privacy Act waiver so that you never meet Nurse Ratchet at the administration desk saying, well, you may be the medical agent, but I don't have an authorization that you can see the medical file, and they're just trying to make your life difficult. So remove the hurdles and have both of those documents.
And that second one is called the HIPAA file?
HIPAA release.
HIPAA release.
H-I-P-A-A. HIPAA release.
Okay.
It's a health insurance.
And my advice is be real careful who you assign medical power of attorney to. A number of years ago, a friend of mine and I executed documents and named each other for our medical power of attorney. About a week after I signed the paper, I was in the emergency room. I had kidney stones. I'd never been in the hospital before. So the people from my office who brought me to the hospital, who should we call? I said, call Steve. Steve says, okay, he doesn't want you to keep him alive by any extraordinary means. Pull the plug. He said, no, he'll be home this afternoon. No, you don't understand. He doesn't want you to keep him alive.
That's actually a third document you should have, you know, of the 6 or 7 that are important, and that's a directive to physicians where you can make end-of-life decisions. Mm-hmm. Directive to, in Texas, it's called a directive to physicians, family, and surrogates. Other states call it a living will, and that's where you could exercise your proxy vote to say now before the need arises, should you become so incapacitated, which according to your doctors you're going to die from this condition, whether it's terminal or irreversible, then if you can no longer communicate, do you want them to stop rendering treatment and let you go as gently as possible? In your case, David, if you could speak for yourself, then you can override and revoke them trying to pull the plug and leave it plugged in. So that's kind of
They were trying to explain to him, and he knew, but they were trying to, no, he just needed some painkillers until he passes the kidney stone. No.
See, I think another way to resolve this is with a little chest ink. You know, you could, you know, spell out the please do not resuscitate me and on your chest and a tattoo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if in the alternative, you do hand placement instructions, you know, like right there on your chest. When they rip your shirt open, place hand, palm of hand here. Then you're set, you know.
Always creative. I like that.
See, my instructions are I want the state of Texas to spend as much money as they have to keep me alive. When my father was sick, it was around the time of Terry Schiavo. She was the person in the vegetative state. Well, the hospital called me up. It was real sudden that he had Alzheimer's and he had other things, but he had had a stroke. And between Friday and Monday, he just went from, you know, he was just having a little bit of pains to they were ready to pull the plug. And they asked me, and I said, well, I don't think it's my decision in Florida. Don't I have to get the approval of Jeb
Congress.
Bush? They said, I don't think Jeb Bush will know. I said, yes, he will. So I called Jeb's office. They hung up on me 3 times.
That's funny.
That's fabulous. That's funny.
The president fly back to Washington, D.C., and Congress in 2 a.m. didn't vote on what you should do?
No, they didn't.
They didn't take it up to the Supreme Court?
I did make them wait, though, until I got there. I mean, I said, they'll be down there tomorrow. Just... Right. Can you wait?
Wow.
That is one.
I know we've been talking, you know, a lot about the legalities of what
people in our community should do with wills and whatnot, especially couples. But I wonder if we could talk a little bit about just the common sense of it all. You know, a lot of couples think because, well, one half of the couple thinks, well, his family or her family wouldn't do that to me because we're so close. And like, you just never know.
You
just never know. And there's that great movie. I can remember one of the actors' name, but one of them was Brooke Shields.
Cherry Jones.
And Cherry Jones. And, you know, it was a true story down in Florida. They didn't do anything. And when she passed, her in-laws, who were so supportive, her, you know, not legal in-laws, were so supportive while they were together, but totally changed their tunes once their daughter passed,
right,
and gave her hell.
You don't have any way of knowing what's going to
happen. You just don't know.
Because, you know, when the person died, that's kind of the grease on the wheel. And the wheel comes to a screeching halt, and you don't know that that's going to occur, and you're going to be out there with this rusty, now stopped wheel and no way to lubricate it because partner's gone, and you have no legal rights.
No legal rights.
So you've got to plan for it in advance. That happened to these two guys I represented a few years ago. They were domestic partners registered in New York before you could get married up there,
mm-hmm,
and had a place here in Dallas and traveled a lot. They took Jim's mom with them to Europe, and everybody was close, you know. They
mm-hmm
were just living beautifully. And back in New York, fast forward a year, and Jim's hit by a car, and he sustains a head injury. And this head condition made it difficult, in fact impossible, at least on the short term, for him to manage his affairs. Because they're registered in New York as domestic partners, Tony had the right to make medical decisions and could make business decisions. You can't do that in Texas because you need a statutory durable power of attorney to handle the business component of it. They didn't have any documents in Texas, but Tony wanted to fly him to Texas because of the rehab center to help with the rehabilitation of this process.
Mm-hmm.
And mom lived in Texas and went to the court and filed to be appointed as Jim's guardian.
Oh.
Wow.
Because he couldn't manage his own affairs, and that Tony boy, you know, he's just a stranger. Mm-hmm. And so just the roommate. And
yeah,
so,
just the roommate.
I need to be appointed as my son's guardian. And they ended up in a huge litigated proceeding in the probate court in Dallas County because they had no Texas documents. So the one of the others that we need to mention is you need to have a declaration of guardian in case of later incapacity or need. Mm-hmm. It will permit you to designate. He could have designated Tony as his guardian if he ever became incapacitated and avoided, you know, all of that legal fight down there. You know, Jim would go to the... Tony would go to the judge and say, Jim doesn't need a guardian. I've got powers of attorney. But if you think he does, here's his declaration of guardian where he said he wants it to be me. And in some families where it may not be so cozy and everybody's happy, at least on the surface, you can actually disqualify family members in your declaration of guardian so that the court is clear that under no circumstances do you want that whack job Fred Phelps from ever stepping in to be your guardian.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I do have Kansas relatives.
Yeah, and I had an incident like that happen to me about 25 years ago in Georgia. A friend of mine who was at his end of life, his parents, who had been two of the founders of PFLAG, stepped in, and they wanted to have a say in end-of-life decisions, whereas that's not how any of the paperwork worked. The judge, actually, in Georgia, actually worked out a very nice deal where they would make joint decisions.
Wow. That's
so
unheard of.
Yeah, which 25 years ago,
yeah,
in Georgia, completely unheard of. And
totally unheard of.
And the parents really, I'm not criticizing them in anything. They were doing it out of love. They weren't doing it out of, I want to cut you out. It was more, this is our kid. We want to be involved.
Well, and that's what happened in the Terry Schiavo case. It was husband against mommy and daddy.
Right.
She was 28 years old when she stroked.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to mention one last document, make sure that we don't run out of time, and that's called the appointment of agent to control disposition of remains.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a gothic way of saying it, but essentially you want to designate partner to be able to make funeral or memorial arrangements. A funeral home will not deal with you. 10-plus years together notwithstanding, you are strangers to the funeral home, and mm-hmm you will not be allowed to make each other's final arrangements unless you have this appointment of agent signed by the principal before a notary, before the need arises, and then countersigned signed by the agent who's agreeing to be financially responsible for whatever the arrangements are. If you don't have that document in your package, then it's going to be mom and dad or brothers and sisters probably going to have you buried in Chagotyville.
Yeah.
You know, against your wishes. For eternity.
Right, right.
And then we were just dumping Aaron in the ocean. But you know.
And another one, you know, going back to the common sense thing, is when couples decide to have children. There's no way, at least in this day and age, until medical science really advances, for someone of the same-sex couples to both be related to the child.
In Texas.
So one of you might be the biological, one of you may not be. The one who is not, you've got to do something, or at least contact an attorney and see what you can't, see what your options are. I would think that's common sense.
Well said, Laurent. That's exactly right. You are living in a situation where you've got to create all the rights between you and your children by contract. So if one of you is the adoptive parent, there are attorneys who can help you do what's called a second parent adoption, and those have actually been upheld. So in Texas, those have been upheld when it's a same-sex couple with the second parent being of the same sex. So I think in that sense we are fortunate. You need to take some steps in order to ensure that's going to apply to you and your family, because there's nothing more important than your partner and your kids.
All right.
Well, I know this is your field, and you're certainly plugged into LGBT activism and politics, but have you been hearing any anecdotal or beyond stories about couples who are living in states that recognize marriage equality, that have marriage equality, and encountering exercising their rights where they would have had these very special provisions and all of these documents, where they've really exercised that marriage license?
Well, Louise and Viv, mm-hmm. when they lived in Massachusetts, I'm probably talking about someone everybody knows by first names, and hardly even that. Viv is just...
Louise Young and Vivian Armstrong have been on our show many times.
Many times.
And when they lived in Massachusetts, you know, it just became commonplace to have your spouse who could do all of these things, and what a joyous occasion it was to be so ordinary. And that's really all you want. You don't want special rights. You want equal rights, to be considered just ordinary married couple. And they had to choose between enjoying those rights and coming back to Texas and being single again. Mm-hmm. But this is where their family was. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping for the day, and may it be in our lifetimes, and in fact in this decade, that we'll all have those rights to be ordinary.
So, and in Texas as
and
well.
In Texas.
So of these things, Laurent, are you thinking there are some things that you need to put in place right now?
Oh, yeah. Especially the burial thing.
Appointment of agent.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really important. Yeah, we have some things we need to sew up too.
You'll free sometime this week.
Well, I think it's really important to recognize that a lot of people who are not educated on our issues, and I'm talking about straight people who may or may not support us, don't really realize that there is really no level of security. And I'm talking about a feeling and a sensation of security. Even if you have all of these papers,
right,
that they will be honored. And so when you're on your deathbed and you're about to meet your maker, I want to know that the house and everything is going to go to Erin, and there's not going to be any bumps, and she's going to have to just deal with the grief and the changing of her life because I'm leaving, you know, and not have to deal with adversarial things.
It'll be a big party.
Well, I hope there's a big party.
But the point is exactly that.
You know, right. I don't have that sense that I can pass and it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at it this way. When you have a will, you've at least given her a chance to succeed.
Yeah.
If you do no documents at all, you know, game over, you know, before you even begin to look at your maker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you need to have these documents to... at least.
And one other thing,
level.
As a practical point, when you have a normal family, like, you know, you do, Patty, mm-hmm. You're close to your sister, you have a close family, isn't it a good idea to then, after the paperwork is in place, to sit down with people in your family and tell them, these are my plans?
I think that's a great idea. So nobody is surprised. You know, you could call them a love letter if you don't want to sit down face-to-face with them, to write them. And I would say do it on the computer and sign it, but to hand write a letter, I know it's a lost art, but then they know it's in your hand and you're telling them, you know that Erin's important to me, you know that this is what my wishes are, and I hope that you will help see that she gets what she's entitled to get.
And
so
I think that's really
an ally.
I think that's really important, and I had a living experience of that with my mom, and she had a living will, and told everybody knew what her wishes were, and we had to invoke that living will at one point, and it was amazing that she had already laid the groundwork that, you know, everyone in the family, everyone in the neighbors and families and friends knew exactly.
Because I'm sorry, we're finished.
We're just running out of time.
He's going like this. I guess that means that we're out of time.
Yes.
Rebecca, I want to thank you so much for being here. Come back,
pleasure.
See us again.
Be happy to.
For Patty
Enjoyed
Fink,
it.
LaRon Landis, I'm Dave Taffet. We'll be back next week. Ken Upton's our guest next week, and we'll see you with more Lambda Weekly then.